Many of you know what it means because you are housers. So our members are in public housing. Some of them own their own homes. Some of them live with families. There's rest homes, assisted livings, congregate housing, all of that. That's what it means by living in the community. Who's eligible for PACE? How do you become eligible for PACE? It's a voluntary program. So you need to be 55 years of age or older. You need to live in a PACE service area. I hope at the end we will send out some information where all the PACE locations are, but when it says approved service area, you actually have to get approved by CMS in the state in order to practice PACE in an area. Uplands, for example, is in 21 neighborhoods in Boston. And when I say neighborhoods, I'm really referring to zip codes, just so you know.
Nancy, I'm going to interrupt you because we are going to post right now the link in the chat to all the towns that offer PACE in the state.
Perfect. Thank you. You need to be able to live safely in the community with PACE services. So I want to go back to that, but that is something you need to do in order to be eligible for PACE. The other component is you have to meet a certain level of care. So in the state, it's called nursing home care. And for you may be familiar with an assessment tool called the MDS. So many PACE programs, their nurse completes an MDS prior to enrollment, and then the state certifies you to be nursing home certifiable. So who's sort of a typical PACE person that might be eligible? Think about people that might have needs, ADL needs, people that are in your residences that need help with bathing, that need help with walking, eating, toileting, transferring, all of those things. So some stats that I have with regard to who a PACE person is with regard to ADL needs, 26% of all PACE participants have 1 to 2 ADL needs. So they have an issue with dressing, not an issue, but they have a need or some kind of support need for dressing, bathing, transferring, toileting, walking, eating. 25% have 3 to 4 ADL needs. And then 35% have 5 to 6. So think about the person who might be isolated in one of your residences, that they're not able to get out in the same way that they used to be able to get out. They miss doctor's appointments. They get meals delivered, but they're not really eating that well. Those are sort of some of the typical folks that might be eligible and might, and PACE may be the kind of program that you, that would be good for them. In PACE, again, this is a national figure. The average age is 76. If you looked at sort of stats from like, I don't know, 10 years ago, the average was, age was in the 80s. Our fastest growing cohort, and this is true for our program, I think it's true for other programs in Massachusetts, is that 55 to 65 year old age grouping. Many of those folks come to us with depression, a lot of behavioral health needs, so depression, substance abuse, alcoholism. So it's the newest, fastest growing group of folks who are PACE eligible. And so there are no financial requirements to PACE, but what I will say to you is that the majority of people have Medicare and Medicaid. I would say that about 90% of people both have MassHealth and have Medicare. Another 10% or maybe a little bit less than that have Medicaid only. And then there is a really small number of people who private pay, but that is not the norm. The majority of them are dual. So then just very briefly, a little bit about sort of what makes PACE unique. So once you enroll in our program, you are actually given an IDT, an interdisciplinary care team. And that care team is made up of several people, and it's not limited to these folks, but you get a primary care provider who is a geriatrician. You get a registered nurse, master's level of social work, PT, OT, speech, an activities coordinator, someone who's thinking about recreational things for you, a registered dietitian, a center manager, a home care manager, a transportation education, all of these folks sort of get to know you, assess you, make a decision about sort of what your individualized care plan looks like. And so sometimes it can be a little bit overwhelming having all of those folks, but it also really allows for truly a holistic approach. So what is covered? So think about all the services that are covered under Medicare and Medicaid. They are all covered under PACE, but then really what makes PACE unique and really nimble, in of which both of my colleague, as well as the folks from Fallon will speak, from Summit will speak about, is the ability to be really nimble. We can cover things that are not covered under MassHealth or Medicare, as long as it's considered an approved medically necessary service or a support service that the team approves. So there's lots of examples of that, and I'm gonna leave some of those to the other folks to speak to. But one other thing that I really wanted to say in terms of, it really is, once you enroll in our program, we really cover everything. And when I mean that, it sometimes is hard to believe, but we really do care for, so things that are covered, regular doctor's visits, specialty visits, hospital care, all your prescription drugs, transportation needs, meals, home care, end of life. These are some of the things that sort of make us a little bit unique. We also cover all the support services that you need to be able to stay at home. So if you need personal care in the home, homemaking services, health aids, all of that. So many programs work with a lot of housing providers out there in terms of sort of being able to supplement some of our support services into the homes of these folks that are your residents. PACE has a really nice relationship at a national level with a trade organization called National PACE Association, NPA. They represent many of the organizations that I spoke to. And then also in Massachusetts, we work really closely with the Mass PACE Association. So we're all sort of connected, and we can all sort of help put you into speaking with the right people. Emily has been terrific in this. I am actually going to go to Mari Perez. She is our Quality and Innovations Director at Uphams. And I just want her to speak a little bit about sort of how PACE at Uphams sort of has survived the COVID surge and all. So go ahead, Mari.
Mari, you're muted, I think.
Sorry.
There you
Thank
go.
Thank you, everyone. Hi. So just a quick overview. Uphams PACE is part of Uphams Corner Health Center. We have three sites, and we have a partnership with TCB for our supportive housing. Our first site is in the Dorchester area near Seven Hills. Our second site is in the heart of Roxbury in the near Nubian Square. And our third site, which is in the Roxbury Jamaica Plains site, is, we like to think of it as our JP site, is where we have our supportive housing partnership, which started with the Boston Housing Authority, and it's currently in partnership with the community builders. We have an average of 300 participants. To one of Nancy's comments, 98% of our participants currently live in the community, and that is absolutely due to the established partnerships that we have been able to develop throughout the years. In terms of how we manage during this time, I have to say that I think Uphams PACE was very fortunate to be able to be in a position to provide access to healthcare during this pandemic to a very high risk population. This really not only allowed to have the direct access to healthcare, but it allowed us to mitigate the risk of eviction as well as to manage food access to a lot of our participants, which I don't have to say to this group are key social determinants to keep people thriving in the community, and we were able to do that. And we did that by reconfiguring the delivery of services as it relates to supportive care, the use of the PACE Center, innovating with telehealth, and really rethinking the community partnerships, not only with the housing agency, but with the social services. As it relates to telehealth, up until March, we were three PACE sites, high touch program in which participants would come and get all a one-stop shop for all their needs. And we really had to transform and complement that with becoming tech savvy, a tech savvy delivery service of care using telehealth, not only for the clinical encounters, but really trying to innovate with it as a social platform to manage isolation. And I can't underscore how in its infancies this initiative is at, but to date, we really have been able to do virtual cooking classes, tours of the MFA, exercise group. We've been able to have our participant advisory committee, which is a mandate of our CMS requirements, gospel group, music therapy. In our supportive housing, we have a schedule so that the family members can have virtual time with their loved ones. And the biggest thing that we're trying to work out is a virtual tour of Fenway, which has everyone very excited. In terms of the centers, I think one of the things that really was key was that we never closed. We were able to reconfigure how we use them and redeploy our staff to better serve our participants during this crisis. One of the centers was reconfigured to be our distribution site, and that really helped with all the delivery of supplies, of food, of you name it. So that was key. And our other two programs were opened with incredible strict infection control practices and really weighing the benefits of bringing the participants in. But it allowed us to provide not only clinical encounters, but clinical interventions. If we decided that participants needed to spend an abbreviated day at the center. So, that indirectly really allowed us to manage emergent needs and try to triage, not sending anyone to the emergency room, which, as we know, we're very busy. I guess that the other aspect that I think I'd like to highlight has to do with our community care. Upham's PACE, part of Upham's Corner Health Center, has a strong partnership with the Home Health Aid Department. And it became very evident that when our goal was to decrease footprint and mitigate the exposure of our participants, having that partnership really allowed us very swiftly to reconfigure our services. And that was key in caring for the participants. But I do want to highlight that a program that I think was instrumental in the care of our participants is our PCW program, which mirrors the PCA program for Massachusetts. And similar to that program, it allows the consumer, in this case the participants, to identify someone that they trust to care for them. They are hired then by Upham's and trained by PACE to care for them. And we have over 50 participants, I don't have the exact number, we have over 50 participants that have this program, and they were stars during this time in really caring for participants. They were invaluable. I guess I want to say that, obviously we're still in the middle of a crisis. We're not in the thick of it as we were months ago, but PACE programs, programs like PACE, partnering with housing agencies and social services, only make us a better community, and we proved it again and again during this time. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy and Mari. That was really helpful. And I just want to highlight a few things I heard you say for folks on the phone. One, I heard you say that people 55 and older were eligible. So it's not just for people who are, you may have people in your buildings who, if you run an elderly disabled building, for example, you might have younger people. Two, I heard Nancy say that term nursing facility level of care is always a little confusing. Why aren't they in a nursing facility? And just to be clear from what I think Nancy said was also that there are people who, take care of themselves and physically are okay, but maybe psychologically or for behavioral health, substance use, mental illness, they might qualify for those, for the PACE program based on some of those issues. It's not just a program for people who have physical limitations. I also heard you say it was free. if you're on MassHealth. So if you are on MassHealth and you enroll in PACE, if you're on, you know, you're able to enroll in PACE, then all those services that were mentioned were covered. And so that is key. And then the last thing I want to say is what I heard you say, and I think we heard Bari talk about as well, was that your job is to keep people out in their homes for as long as possible and give them whatever services they might need to do that. So that's a range. And in days, hot days like last week, it might have been installing an air conditioner or buying an air conditioner for somebody. These are your resident, for folks on the phone, these are your residents. They are the folks that you, you know, there's some people who went into the pandemic okay, and might not, and might come out of the pandemic not as great. And may, they may have deteriorated. And that's one of the reasons we're talking about the PACE program with you today as a resource in your community. The last thing I want to say before I forget is that Nancy mentioned that we're not, it's not a statewide program, unfortunately, at this point. So there are swaths of like the Cape, for example, that doesn't have a PACE program, but we have put the, we sent out the list ahead of time. I didn't want anybody having to like listen to this and be disappointed at the end. What do you mean it's not in my area? And we put the link to the map in the chat room, and we'll send it out afterwards so you can look for your PACE program in your area. So with that, I'm gonna turn it over to Dr. Rob Schreiber, who's the Vice President and Medical Director of Summit Elder Care. He's gonna really focus on not so much as the basics of the PACE program, but really what Summit Elder Care, which is another PACE program like Upham's Corner, what they were able to do in the pandemic to support their PACE consumers and to be, as Nancy said, I think nimble. So Dr. Schreiber, I'm gonna turn it over to you, and I think we have your PowerPoints here. So if you just wanna tell Lynn when it's, you should go to the next slide. And for folks on the phone, we'll send these out right after the call.
Great. Thank you, Emily. I appreciate this opportunity. And on the phone today with me is Steve Boyce, or actually his picture's there, who is the outreach manager of Summit Elder Care, and he'll probably help with a lot of the question and answers. Today, what we really wanted to do is to talk about how Summit Elder Care, but really all the PACE programs in Massachusetts, as well as nationally, really went above and beyond with the pandemic and what we're doing still as a result of this, expecting potentially a resurgence in the fall. So we're really going to talk about how PACE programs and housing integrate in the age of COVID and what the new normal is for these individuals that we've heard about. Next slide, please. So just quickly, Summit Elder Care, we're the seventh largest PACE program in the country, largest in New England. We have five PACE sites now located in Massachusetts. We have a mega site in Worcester and one in Western New York. As of June 1st, we had about 1,323 participants, and we're celebrating this year our 25th anniversary, having originally opened in 1995. Here's a picture of our newest site in Worcester on Grove Street, and that is our site where we now have 400 participants. Next slide, please. So you've heard about the focus of our organization of PACE, and it's really very consistent with what housing does, which is keeping our communities healthy, and that's the mission of Fallon Health. But specifically, trying to give our participants, your residents who have complex needs to live with dignity and independence that they want to have, and having all their healthcare needs met reliably and well, with a sense of well-being and inclusion in personal relationships and in the community. And by the way, making this sustainable by cost is really what all PACE tries to do. And I think this is what we would all want as we age. And if we become old enough and frail enough, PACE programs are something that I would strongly recommend everyone consider, because you don't have to just be dual eligible. You can be Medicare only and still get the benefits from this program. Next slide. So I really want to go back to March when we saw what was happening in Washington, New York, and we knew that Massachusetts was starting to pick up. And there was a sense of urgency, not only at Summit Elder Care, but all the PACE programs, of what we're going to need to do to meet the challenges that COVID-19 we're going to have. The promise of PACE, as you heard, is to reliably adapt and to meet the community needs of our participants. And we knew we were going to be tested in ways that most of us could never have imagined. We needed to prepare for the worst case scenario and what was that going to be like. So as a result, you know, how are we going to do this? And again, like I said, this is an example of what we did, but I will tell you almost all the PACE programs that I have talked with, that I've heard from and has presented have done similar or even, you know, very creative things. So we're only giving you an example of what could be done. There's many more out there. Next slide. So the first thing we had to do was realizing that our adult day centers, which oftentimes are the hub and had been the hub of PACE, needed to now rethink their purpose and their role. So we had to repurpose our centers to the point that we now needed to bring care into participants in their homes, as well as our housing sites and assisted living facilities. And we did this in a number of ways. And this is only meant to be a sample, and maybe there'll be more chance to talk about this, because I know UPHAMS also did things like this. But we had daily telephonic check-ins. We had rounding weekly by members of the interdisciplinary team, whether by phone or in person in people's homes or in the housing sites. And as you heard about telehealth, we had not been using telehealth, but all of a sudden it became the way of doing things. And it has not only changed the way we stay connected with our participants, but improved, I think, the care ability that our teams can do. Next slide, please. So I just want to talk about housing with Summit Elder Care, because this has been something very dear and near to my heart, and I truly believe is a critical component of good older adult care. So housing sites in particular are a focus for our efforts during the pandemic. And just to give you an example, we have 15% of our population living in public housing. That includes rest homes and other types of homes available, group homes. 25% are living in assisted living. Our rate now from long-term care is about 8%. We think we could get that down to under 5%, maybe not 2% like Upham's Corner, but 5% if we had more public housing where we could provide support. We have 32 units of supporting housing, and that's a model of care which we can talk a little bit more about. And specifically, it involves having a group of people that would be living in a nursing home that truly need 4 to 6 to 7 hours of care a day, but we're able to do that in a community setting by having an aide available 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Now, it's not only the social support needs, but it's the medical support. So we were actually developing teams to go into these different settings to make certain that the needs, the medical as well as their social support needs, are being met. So the question really was, what was the value proposition of our housing sites? We had asked that question before COVID. We knew the answer to that. But now with COVID pandemic, what was that value proposition? Next. So what was very interesting, the organizational focus we had regarding outcomes was the same for our housing partners. And the pandemic made us really have those conversations. It allowed us to keep people in place. And the housing sites, as well as the assisted livings, realized, oh my gosh, we can bring care in. Now, we had to be careful. We had to have PPE available. There were a lot of things we had to do. But the behavioral needs that people had, the social supports, were able to be met through our programs. The resident, you know, directs care based on what matters most to them. That's in the housing, but that's also for us. The other piece about the impact of housing, many of you know housing makes a difference, but how can you prove that? Well, guess what? PACE programs have total cost of care. We can look at the total expense and we can compare populations that live in supportive housing or public housing versus those that don't, and compare them to nursing home costs. And guess what happens? In a lot of these settings, even with our supportive housing model, there is a cost avoidance. Less cost to the individual and to the system of $40,000 per year per person. We've done the analysis. It's stunning. That's money that can be put back into care services and other types of supports to keep people in place. And who else provides this? PACE programs do this, but you know, I'd love to hear, are there other programs out there? Because, you know, again, very few that I know of. Next slide, please. So that's the housing piece. So we went from this center and we went into the community, but also we realized that there was going to be an issue, that there were going to be assisted livings that could not take people back who were COVID positive. We knew that there would be potentially nursing homes that would be struggling managing this population, but the goal of the individual was to stay in the community. So what would happen if they were in the hospital and there was no place for them to go? So what we did was we decided we were going to start a infirmary, basically a 24-hour day, 7-day a week nursing care facility, an alternative care facility, in order to meet the needs for community care for those individuals whose goals were to stay out of the hospital or out of a nursing home. As you know, if you were COVID positive or you were living in a nursing home and you were sick, you could not have your family come in and see you. Same thing in the hospital. And for some people, that was not what they wanted, especially if they were failing and there was a chance that they could die. So we implemented a 22-bed skilled care unit. We opened on April 22nd and closed it on June 5th. We had expected a surge of at least 26 to 28 of our participants. Our first participant was admitted to April 23rd. Luckily, and I do think it was luckily, but I think it was a lot of the interventions we did, we only had to serve 11 participants. And the longest stay was 23 days, and the shortest stay was 7 days. Next slide. So this is a picture of the team that was involved, and we used the Grove Street site. That building actually was perfect for a infirmary. And then these are pictures of our participants who were COVID positive. And this was an only COVID positive facility. I can tell you, this model, when we presented it to a number of medical directors, they really felt that what we did saved lives. So having this model in place truly made a difference. And what we learned from this is that PACE can uniquely transform to meet the needs of frail older adults in novel ways. This is an example. And there were some other programs around the country that did very similar things to what we did. But what it taught me is that now more than ever, PACE needs to be available to all eligible older adults in the community. And it also taught us that having engaged housing partners that could be our eyes and ears, where we could aggregate care and can work in conjunction with the partners, truly made a difference, because we would be notified if there were changes and we were able to respond in a fairly quick and nimble way. Next slide. So I'm going to end with this slide because I know there's a lot of questions, and the last thing you need to do is hear us go on and on about this. But I do think that the new normal is now, and that there is a partnership between PACE and housing, and it needs to be integrated. There was an article in Health Affairs, there's the reference, that talks about 45% of middle-income seniors will have insufficient resources for housing and healthcare, and that's the baby boomers. Where are they going to live? So this type of housing that you all promote and deal with are going to be critical. The missions of housing and PACE are very aligned. Like I said, we have total cost of care, so we can actually show the value of housing integration and show it as a driver of outcomes. We can allow, this will allow for the business case to be developed for low-income housing that is integrated with comprehensive health care. And if I had a big, hairy, audacious goal, if I could do something with a magic wand, this is what I would say. Think about all the university campuses and all the colleges in the country. How many of them have nursing programs, pharmacy programs, social work programs, medical schools? How if we had public housing on those campuses that would be open for students to come in and learn? And think about the difference it would make in people's lives. And that really gets down to housing is essential foundation for social determinants of health. You can't live a good life without appropriate housing. It's necessary, but not sufficient. You need all these other aspects that we've heard about to make that difference. So with that, I'll close and I'll turn it back to Emily.
Thanks. And Rob, that's great. You also have Emily and her dog at the moment. So apologize for that. That was very, very helpful. And it's impressive to hear how, like, as you both of you use the word nimble, you know, unlike other programs that are involved with MassHealth, PACE is actually the provider and the payer. So that makes it so that you don't have to go ask somebody's permission to do something in the same way that you would in a different kind of plan. I heard you talk about a few things. I know there's some questions coming in. I also just want to clarify that both Summit and Upham's have sort of these deals with, whether it be public housing or subsidized housing, where there have been units set aside for PACE participants. So I know for Summit, you have some in Leominster and Fitchburg housing authorities. You also have some private subsidized housing, for example, Hotel Aurora, I think, in Worcester might be one of them. Nope, not that one, but something else. But you will, if anybody's eligible, wherever they're living in the community, in an apartment building, in subsidized housing, in their own home, if they meet the financial and clinical criteria, they can be on PACE, right? They don't have to live in one of your settings.
Absolutely. The beautiful part about supportive housing, and we can talk about this a little bit later, but our problem was that we have 25% of people in assisted living. If they need 5 or 6 hours of personal care, it cannot be done in assisted living. We have to bring in services, and oftentimes we can't find health aides to do that. So supportive housing is an option for people that want to stay in the community, and having these units that you were talking about where we could provide that wraparound care on site is really the model that, you know, we're promoting. Because if you live long enough and you get frail and you become more functionally dependent, you're going to need 4, 6, 8 hours of care potentially a day.
So Dr. Sharma, you also mentioned, and you showed a picture with folks all in their PPE. I know that much of the concern for some of the housers has been about people coming in, right? How do I keep my residents safe? So they've said no visitors or only essential health people, or even meals are being dropped off at the door. How are you ensuring, if you're going into apartment buildings, is your staff, you know, can we trust that your staff is safe? Like, I think that's a concern from some of the folks on the call.
Great question. So early on, again, there was a lot that we had to do. Getting PPE was critical, but training people on how to do it. So home aides, nurses, providers, everybody had PPE, and when they went in with full PPE when the outbreak occurred. As far as we know, none of our participants that we saw, and we did a lot of care in assisted livings throughout our, you know, areas, none of them contracted from us. We had four staff get it, but some were very early when we didn't have enough PPE and we didn't know about this. So 3 of them got it before. So as far as we know, people were watched when they put on gowns, when they took off their PPE. So we did a lot of training and retraining, and we ensured that everybody had and did the right thing. We did social distancing, even if we went into the home. We went in, did what we had to do, and then if there were things that could be done outside, we did them outside. So we minimized the contact. But we did have home health aides that had to work hand in glove with them. And knock on wood, our home health aides did well. There were no issues on that. So it is a problem. But again, that's the trust and relationship that we have, the promise of PACE to do the right thing by our participants. So, and even the housing sites and even the assisted livings originally were saying, no, no, no. When they started to see the benefit of what the impact was, they were like, come in, thank you. You know, and again, we were very respectful and we followed the protocols as well. So.
And I like when you talk about PPE and you used hand and glove. That was a good pun. Nancy or Mari from Upham's Corner, we have some questions about, and I think they're kind of around the same thing. How do I know if there are residents in my building are eligible? If I'm concerned about somebody, you know, how can I assist with enrolling them? What do I do? Because people are coming out of their rooms and might not look good. What do I do about that? So does Nancy or Mari want to unmute themselves? Okay. Sure. Nancy?
Sure. One of the things that I believe that you will be sending along later is some information with regard to Upham's and how one would actually access Upham's. But you know, every PACE program has an outreach or a marketing department, and they identify sort of a phone number where you call to do a referral. I know that for Upham's, we have an online application that you can do via the web if you need to send a referral. We make calls back to people within 24 to 48 hours. But I mean, I think that if residents or resident service coordinators or others really think that this, I think having us come out and talk to people, to really, you know, talk to the families, talk to the caregivers, talk to the actual individuals about what PACE is. It is a voluntary program. And, you know, this is how we have developed our relationships all along, is that we work really closely with the resident coordinators and or the property managers at other locations to sort of instill a trust, but also have, you know, not everyone that gets referred to us joins PACE. Not everyone that gets referred to us is eligible for PACE. But, you know, as we have developed these relationships, it has become more in sync, and we are always there willing to sort of, we're looking for folks to join PACE. Absolutely.
What if somebody says to you, first of all, when you said the referral form, can like a resident service coordinator fill that out?
I would imagine that they should assist the person. We are obligated by CMS rules and regulations with regard to cold calling people. So we need their permission. We need the resident's permission to actually talk with them. So, you know, if a resident service coordinator is talking to someone, they can actually help assist with the application online in terms of the referral online. There's many examples where we work with one person who actually calls us on behalf of residents because they don't have access to, you know, an online service or whatever. And as long as we confirm that that person has given the okay, we can go out and talk with them. So we can be creative around this as well. So
as a resident service coordinator, I don't need to determine if somebody is nursing facility level of care, right? Like I can, if somebody's interested or so, I think it'd be a great match, I should just call.
I think I would call. So, I think that, you know, how one becomes eligible is really, it really is a clinical assessment tool, and our outreach team works hand in hand with a nurse. And there's questions that we ask on the phone initially before we may go out to the home, and we can sort of identify whether a person might qualify or not. But you know what, going through the process, that one time, that first visit is worth it, because the end result could be that you get to enroll in PACE. So.
Emily, can I just interject there too?
Sure, but you have to tell us who you are.
Yeah, so Stephen Boyce, I'm the manager of outreach from Summit Elder Care. Just wanted to let you know that usually what I say to property managers and RSCs is that, you know, go with your gut. You know, if you have a resident in your building that is isolated, they're not coming down for activities.
Right.
You know, those are the people that we know need help.
Exactly.
You know, if it's somebody who's healthy and, you know, they're running 5 miles in the morning and, you know, then heading up the activities committee at the property, person probably doesn't need PACE right now. So you just go with your gut. You know, it's the folks that really just need our help and need that assistance. And you know your residents, you know them much better than we do. And, you know, with my team of account executives, we really truly, you know, partner with those property managers and RSCs so that you become an extension of our outreach team. And you don't need to know all the criteria. We don't expect you to do our job. But again, it's that gut. You know your residents, call us, and we'd be more than happy to have that conversation with them. And as Nancy said, you know, not 100% of folks that we talk to enroll within PACE. And there's a percentage of them that don't qualify. But
what do you do with those folks? Are they just kind of like, see ya, or do you
see ya, help them? Yeah, beat me to the punch. And I was going to say, and because I think, you know, with PACE, we're so connected to other community-based providers and other maybe home health, VNAs, other senior care options plans that may be a better fit, we're good at, you know, being that connector. So if they're not good for PACE, we're connected with other providers, other programs in the area, and we could suggest that they reach out to them, and then we could work with the property manager through that whole process. And Emily, if I could just say one other thing while I have a captive audience here, just to clarify for the mass health component of PACE. It's been said a couple times, and this is one of the confusing things that comes up. So you do not have to have mass health, Medicaid, in order to enroll within PACE. And they don't need to qualify for mass health standard in order to enroll within PACE. So PACE has a higher gross monthly income threshold than a community mass health product. So for PACE, in order for someone to qualify for the PACE waiver through MassHealth, I believe the gross monthly income is $2,349 as of right now. And anybody else that knows it, if I'm saying the wrong figure, please correct me. But I believe it's $2,349 or less as a gross monthly income.
Per month.
Yes. And then they would qualify for that PACE waiver and pay absolutely nothing into the program.
So let me just do a little translation here for the housers on the phone. Last time I did it, if somebody was about 42% of the area median income or less, they would qualify for PACE for free. If that person may not be on MassHealth right now, but as Steve just said, for PACE, there's a higher income standard for getting on and for regular MassHealth. So we do have some more questions, and I wanna encourage people to put some in the chat room. And then Lynn, have you gotten any email to you? Okay. Is there anyone on the phone who wants to unmute themselves to ask a question?
Yes,
and if
hi.
So, can you say your name, where you're calling
yes.
from?
Hi, this is Rhonda Glyman from Center Communities of Brookline.
Hello,
so nice
Rhonda.
To see all of you, and my friend Rob, who I haven't seen in so long. Great to see you, and thank you for this very important and interesting presentation. Just a quick question on what you just said, Emily, about qualifying for PACE based on income. You said based on area median income. Does the amount to qualify vary by the area, or it's,
No, unfortunately it doesn't. It's a statewide number. So I think, Steve, you said it was $2,349 a month. It's going to be about that
okay.
a month statewide. So
okay.
I just did some math in my head. I try to translate the mass health language into housing language in my head. So for the housers in the world, it's statewide. It's about 42% of AMI. But unlike AMI, it doesn't change by where you are in the state. So it's about $2,349 a month.
Okay. Thank you very much.
No problem. I have a question that came in about kind of teleservices and PACE centers. So the question is how soon do PACE centers think they may resume in-person activities at the sites, or do we see teleservices the wave of the foreseeable future? So I'm not sure. We have any takers? Dr. Schreiber, you wanna?
Yeah, I'll start. I do think telehealth is going to continue. I think as a result of the opening the different stages. We have been opening our centers. We are having people come in, but obviously at significantly reduced numbers. There is that tension of people that really join PACE that need the socialization. So we're having to think about maybe do we do morning shifts? Do we do afternoon shifts so we can get more people in? But in general, if we can avoid somebody coming into the center, and now we do have a lull, but think about the winter. There's going to be flu out there, a lot of viruses. So the telehealth component is going to be an ongoing piece. Doesn't replace the visit. If somebody needs to be seen in person, they will be seen in person because there's a limitation of what you can do with telehealth. But I do think that in general, there's a lot of assessments, a lot of follow-ups that can be done so people don't need to come back in just for those visits. We used to have people just come in for a medical visit, but a lot of times they could be done through telehealth. So I think in a lot of ways, it'll be safer, it will be better, and it will allow us to keep the numbers of people coming through the building to those that really need to be there. So again, it's a learning process, but the way care is being provided, you know, we're going to see. I think the other thing we're looking at, and I know a lot of the other PACE organizations, there are these telehealth platforms where you can have a, you know, a pad in the house. And so if somebody needs, you need to talk and check in on a daily basis, you can do a, you know, face-to-face visit. So you get to know what somebody looks like. If there's a problem, that will also be a sign maybe we need to get a provider visit. So there's a lot of different things that will happen. If we come back in a year, I will guarantee you it's going to look different and people are going to say, wow, the future has come to the present.
So that's a good point. And I, you know, some of these calls that we've had, people have brought up the issue of telehealth sort of limitations. Older adults who can't use an iPhone or don't, or people who have limited incomes and can't afford a data plan, or don't physically know how to use it, or don't have it in front of them. It sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, if somebody needed that gadget or whatever it was, and PACE felt it was needed in order to help with their health or their isolation, whatever, that would be something PACE could provide and cover the cost of. I see nodding, so yes. And okay, because I think that has come up quite a bit. As far as, you know, how definitely the limitations of telehealth with older adults.
We're also going to be able to do outcomes on this. So we actually have a proposal with a proprietary company that actually has an avatar. So it's a talking pet. You pick a dog or a cat that can help you with your issues. And, but it allows us to do telehealth visits as well. So we're actually looking at doing a pilot to see what the impact is, not only in terms of outcomes, you know, but the quality as well as the satisfaction and isolation and the cost. So yes, we can do that tomorrow.
Great.
Like this.
And they don't shed. So that's good.
They don't shed.
All right. So we're coming up on 1 o'clock. I thank you for spending this hour with us. I hope you have gathered some information about PACE that you weren't aware of before. We are going to send out after this call a link to the recording, as well as a link to the slides and marketing materials and the website, so you can determine if there's a PACE program in your area and figure out who to call. What I've heard from the PACE folks here is if you're concerned about an older adult in your community, call them. There's no harm done. You can call them. They will talk to you about it and talk to you about what's going on. And it may be that this is, again, folks who 6 months ago you never would have thought, you know, would need these type of supports. Now, after being alone for 6 months and somewhat isolated, are not in as great a shape. So thank you for joining the call. Thank you to the Leading Age and all my partner agencies. We will be in touch. August is a little tricky with vacations and fun things like that. So we will be in touch around the next call. So join our listserv, seniorhousingcovid19@mass.gov. And have a wonderful rest of your day. Take care, everybody.